com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of education, we have Crystal Farmer today, the student trustee for the SBCC Board of Trustees and the UMOJA student coordinator and a grassroots activist. And if she had any more titles, we wouldn't be able to do the show because what we'll be talking about is her titles. Welcome, Crystal.
It's actually pronounced emoja, so that's how you pronounce it.
Well, but it's actually unity for in Swahili.
Yeah, it means unity.
So
in
if we stick to unity is a good place to start because we're in a country today of pretty much disunity. so what kind of group is this?
So it's a program. It's been around for about 13 years, give or take, maybe a little longer. I was saying that last year, so it's probably 14 years now. But they started it because there was currently no programs geared towards building up African Americans within the community college system. So it's adopted in most community colleges around California. And then UCR just adopted, and I'm sure other colleges and universities will follow suit. But yeah, the program is geared towards helping Black students just achieve academic success, offering extra support so that they can get through the community college system and transfer on to get their bachelor's. So we just got it at SBCC last year in about November, and then I advocated for a position for it because there was currently no student worker positions. And I was working in the equity department before, left that department, and then I was like, hey, we have this new program, but it doesn't have any support yet. Can I work for it? And I went to meet with the vice president of SBCC, and he approved it. So I'm currently the student coordinator for the program. There was another one, but she left and she went on to UCLA. So we're very proud of her. But yeah, that's the program that I work for.
So the population of SBCC is pretty diverse when it comes to, you know, whites, Hispanic, but they're
I wouldn't call it diverse.
Well, it's different. Yeah. It depends on the definition of diverse. It's not homogeneous. How about that?
Okay.
but in terms of Black representation, it's pretty small, if I recall.
Oh yeah, definitely low percentages. I don't have the correct numbers off the top of my head, but probably no more than 3%, maybe probably 1.2%. Right now, I think currently there's maybe 500 Black students at SBCC.
And that's because?
Gentrification. and we don't really, I mean, from what I see from the website, from the marketing, from the support systems we have in place at SBCC, it doesn't say, hey, Black students, come here. This is a place for you, unless you want to play football on the football team. But we all know that not all of us are athletes. Let's get rid of that narrative. You know, we believe in academic success as well. So if you know, a lot of the programs put in place at SBCC we're a Hispanic-serving institution. So a lot of that state equity funding goes into programs for them and not so many programs for Black students. And when Black students come there, they see that. That's why the retention rates are very high for Black students because they're going back home, they're dropping out, they're giving up. When you'll see representation, visibility, support for you, I almost dropped out so many times if it wasn't for some of my mentors and advisors because of these same reasons. And I'm what you would call a successful Black student at SBCC.
So, you know, many schools talk about a Hispanic serving institution. Mm-hmm. How come they don't aspire to be an African-American serving institution? It's just not in the vernacular.
Anti-blackness is real. That's pretty much all I can say to that. And honestly, we are such low populations. I think we're like 6% in California, and we're even less than that in most of the colleges. And actually, a study just came out, which blew my mind. I went to a Q conference up in Sacramento, and it was saying it's not because black students are applying, it's because we're not getting accepted in. So that's pretty sad. You can research that. I'm not sure exactly what study that was, but they told us that at a Q conference for equitable hiring practices, and it was very disheartening. But I think when you're such a low population, it's easy to forget about you, push you to the side, not worry about you, especially if they're not that race isn't academically performing well. Like at SBCC, black students are the lowest performing in all academic departments. So I personally don't understand, because how I see it is you're only as good as your lowest performing group. But I could also see how if we're such a small population and your majority group is graduating, they are performing well, you're going to focus on those students.
So to have true equity, that statement you made about the lowest performing group should be the bogey to make to be successful. But that's not what schools do. Schools are saying what's important is graduation rates. And the graduation rates basically is a function of the mean. Mm-hmm. And even if there weren't racism, we're going to talk about racism because I believe there certainly is. and this country has been racist since its very beginning. Mm-hmm. The objective of the political group and the educators are to get as many students through the system successfully. Mm-hmm. And whether they're white, green, yellow, it doesn't mm-hmm. really matter. Let's just get them through. And yet there are certain groups that require more consideration. You know, I know, because there's no question, that my kids who were very successful, who saw a therapist when they were 6 years old, had tutors. I had a therapist when I was 10 years old. You know, Hillary was right about one thing. It takes a village. And if you don't have the resources and the desire to help your kids, the idea of having a kid in today's environment just succeed, I don't care what color you are, it's really tough. And if you come from an economically deprived environment, it's got to be really much tougher. So you're not going to be swayed by the toughness around you. You're pretty tough looking at you. And so what made you, where's your resilience come from?
Being a black woman. I mean, black feminists alone could save this world. We were naturally from the beginning, from slavery, we've had to hold on to that tough complex, because when our men were out there getting beaten and used for their physical attributes, we had to learn how to love them in a world that taught them that they were less than and they weren't of love. So we had to be tough from the rape culture we received from slavery until now, the mental and physical and violent abuse black women receive, period. It's just, it's in our DNA. It's embedded in our blood to be strong and resilient. But with that being said, that, on the other side of that, it's always also frustrating because a lot of people don't think I have feelings. So I get attacked a lot, especially in Santa Barbara, on social media, in meetings, in school, with comments. And I think it's because of this resiliency and this tough mentality and that whole strong black woman complex that they see. You know, they think, oh, they don't have feelings. They don't cry. They don't hurt. Like, I hurt all the time. I'm a very emotional person, which makes it very hard to do this work, because it's very depressing and it's very, very isolating.
But and given the way you describe the history of black women versus black men, is there statistically a causation, or not causation, statistically, do female black students do better than males because they by definition have more of resilience, or is it, in other words, are there statistics to back that up?
Definitely. There is a statistic, actually just came out this year, about how black women out of every race, all genders, are exceeding at higher rates and graduating at the highest rates right now. And I think it has a lot to do with our resiliency and what this world has put us through. We're still the most marginalized. So we are in constant survival mode every day, and it makes us go out, and we're hustlers. That's what we do. We know how to juggle several things at once and get things going no matter the circumstances, no matter what you're going through. You get up every day and you make it happen. I mean, I do that every day. I'm a single mother of two. I advocated for a position at SBCCC. I now sit on the board. I work for Emoja. I've spoke at countless conferences, panels, rallies. I mean, to be able to do that and still have a social life, still look good, still get my hair done, still put my makeup on. That this is all a all things I juggle.
But when do you do your homework?
I do. I can't stand homework, by the way. Don't believe in it. I feel like if I show up and I'm here and I'm giving you my time, we should do all that in here. And when I leave here, I got other things to do. I'm an adult. But I do my homework. We have to, you know, we have to. I try to skate around it and get out of it when I can. Shout out to those professors that have let me slide. But for the most part, I love to write. So if it's a paper, I got it.
I taught at City College for 12 years, and you're the first honest student in terms of saying that. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafon founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafon Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Crystal Farmer, the student trustee for SBCC Board of Trustees, and a grassroots activist and the student representative for Unity, which in Swahili is?
Emoja.
Emoja. So when Obama got elected, I thought it was great, but I knew that racism was over. I knew that we had gotten past racism. and, you know, over the years, when I watched everybody who didn't like him express absolute hatred for him, where it made no sense because, in fact, a great deal of the policies were policies that the Republicans liked, it occurred to me that we are just as racist as before. And by electing Obama, it made people even more scared and more angry, the white people who are racist. And, you know, it's a wake-up call because it's something that as a white liberal, I really didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, and what's been going on now with, you know, all of these stories about kids getting shot, you know, driving while black. If you would have asked me 10 years ago, is that a systemic problem? I would have said no. So I don't know what you think about what's happening, but things are so bad that maybe that's good because I think we were all asleep for the last 30, 40 years since, you know, the 60s revolution. I thought everything was on track.
I think it hit a lot of people by surprise, a lot of non-black people, I'll say, by surprise, because I've been seeing my cousins, uncles, brothers going to jail for years for no reason, being harassed by the police for years for no reason. I mean, history has shown this has always happened. Police brutality happened during the civil rights movement. Now it's just we thankful for Instagram and Facebook. Things are going viral. But even, I know, thankful for Apple and technology and all this stuff, things are going viral. But even then, what good is that? Because they're not being convicted. So that's a sad thing, too. It's like now I have to be traumatized and see this over and over again on my timeline as a black person and then see people getting off for murder. That's what it is. That's what we'll call it. Surprising? Was it surprising to me? No. But it's made it more it's made people more comfortable to be just racist now. It's made it more comfortable now that we have a misogynistic man in the White House. It's made men feel more comfortable to walk around and just disrespect women and disregard them. Putting people like that in the White House gives people a sense of comfortability. I think with Obama, I think it actually did the opposite. I think people got comfortable and were like, hey, racism is over. We've got a black president. Even I had those thoughts for a minute, like, yes, this is progressive. But then I started watching through his 8 years and how he really wasn't able to get as much done as I wish he would have been. Why? Because white supremacy still exists. Electing a black man is not going to stop a lot of the issues we have. There's still a lot of white men in power that do not care about people of color or equity issues. So it was actually sad to see a black man finally get to that level and still not be able to accomplish as much as he honestly should have and could have.
Well, if part of racism is threat to your own ability to succeed, which is sort of the narrow-mindedness of most prejudice, it's clear that by electing a black president, it probably scared people even more, because now it was the head of the country is black. Okay. And, it's so depressing. Luckily, we have Netflix, so I don't have to watch cable. Because, it's very difficult to watch the news. But, you know, putting aside the race issue for a second, how can women vote for politicians that have these misogynist views? I mean, that to me, forget about minority group, women are willing to put up with this for what? I mean, I don't get it. So just as a woman, what's going on here?
You know, I ask white feminists every day why they put that man in the White House and why they sat there and marched for the Not My President with their pink hats. And it was just really confusing, you know, because I'm sitting there like, you guys did that. Like, what's going on? What's the disconnect here? And I think you can look at history and shown that too. White women have been silenced as well. And it's easier to go along with power and the dominant gender so that you can survive in this world than it is to stick up for what is right.
So one of the issues that affect women in general with going to university is if you have kids and childcare is few and far between and very expensive. So how do you manage that? How do you manage having two children and still have not only a full-time school but also a million different other activities?
Support is big for me. I am fortunate enough and privileged enough to have family. My grandparents are both retired and they're young. My sisters are very helpful as well. So I have help in that aspect, but they also go to a school. Isla Vista Youth Projects, it's an amazing program. I believe they have two locations in Goleta, where I live out in Goleta. And my kids go there Monday through Friday, 8 to 5:30. So that's extremely, helpful. It's amazing. It's what's helped me be able to do all this. And then with the after-hour cares, like if I go to a conference or if I go away on a trip or I have to stay at school late, that's when my family will step in and help me.
So speaking of your family, what is it that – well, let's just start in general. What is your early life like?
So I was born in Santa Barbara, right at College Hospital, and born immediately into a single-parent home. My dad was present, but not really. He was always living in other places further than me, and I would go for like summers and spring breaks. But I didn't really have a good mental relationship with him. The love wasn't really there. It was kind of just like, it was almost like an obligation sometimes. That's how it felt, at least to me. I don't know how it felt to him. And my mom struggled a lot. She struggled with living here. She didn't really like the dynamics of how this county was set up. And she ended up meeting my stepdad at, I was about 3, I think, and they got married to a very mentally and physically abusive relationship. And out of that came my 3 siblings, my 2 sisters and my brother. And so that was a struggle for me growing up, you know, watching their violent relationship. We were homeless, lived in cars, hotels. Often school was the only time me and my siblings would eat sometimes. And my mom was like in and out of that until she finally left that. And then that's why I bounced around to so many schools. I probably went to about like 5 elementary schools, 3 junior highs, and 2 high schools. And then finally in high school, my grandparents, who have always lived here, who've always been an amazing support system, took over guardianship of me, and I graduated from Dos Pueblos. So I spent 3 years there.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes people go through adversity and they just are a mess, and sometimes they build a resilience and they become superstars, and it sounds like you are the latter.
Yeah. I struggled. My children weren't a product of planning and love, that's for sure. I love them, but it was partying and just being out of control and not picking, you know, a decent partner. So I struggled. I dealt with that internalized oppression and trauma and daddy issues and all that I really had to overcome. And I did therapy and found something that I was really passionate about and I could pour love into in a positive way. Because all of that addiction and trauma, it's all still you're pouring passion and love into something. So all you have to do is find something positive to channel that into.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press Radio Station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar, or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christy Farmer, Student Trustee for SBCC Board of Directors, the MOJA Student Coordinator, and a grassroots activist. And we're talking about the unfortunate situation that exists in this country and in Santa Barbara when you're in a minority group and a black person is certainly has incredible challenges, and you see all kinds of things on this in the national conversation that's in a way is off topic, but yet it really has an incredible impact. And what I'm talking about is the NFL kneeling policy. Why is that such a big deal? Why do people get so riled up when someone makes a statement? Is this something here that I'm missing?
Personally, I haven't been watching or keeping up with it since the whole Colin Kaepernick situation. I honestly think organized sports professional is modern day slavery. You've got black men on the auctioning bid and they're auctioning off on their bodies the highest bidder to put them on their team and then profiting off their physical attributes. What was different from slavery? Once you make that correlation, it's just like, how can you find joy in watching it? Especially now you see just their basic human rights being stripped of them. But it's like, no, still go catch that ball for me. I'm not here for it. I really, really hope that with this new ban on now that the players will be fined, I really want to see those black men on those teams boycotting and protesting. I want to see them not playing at all in these games because the NFL is 80% black. If all the black players decided not to play, there would be no games. And they have power. So we need to realize, and people of color, period, need to realize how much power we have. We have consumer power. We have a lot of power. And to start accessing that power and using it to get what we want, which is exactly what white people do.
And the thing that is really unfortunate, I believe that the administration chose this issue because it is so easy to divide people, since a great deal of the NFL fan base is his base. And so this was a perfect way to sort of rile the base up. And you're right. If you look at basketball, which is so interesting because basketball has 98% black, mm-hmm. and they're taking a stand.
They control that.
And they basically push back. And just yesterday, both the Warriors and Cleveland announced that whoever wins, they're not going to go to the White House.
Yeah,
which is good for them. And then there was the incident with Roseanne, and it's so interesting. ABC decided to renew Roseanne because they wanted to connect with that constituency of the population that they hadn't in their quote unquote sophisticated programming. Mm-hmm. Well, what they were really saying that was euphemistic for let's get people who were sort of prejudiced, and it backfired. That's to me is going to go down as a very explicit example of what this country is all about when it comes to racism. So, not to be overly depressing, what are we going to do about it? Is there any? I mean, this has been going on for 300 years. What is the? Is there a solution
or to racism? My theory is just as long as it took to build is going to be as long as it's going to take to tear down. I mean, you're looking at centuries of this. It's embedded in our institutions and our systems and our everyday life. It's everywhere. People are always like, don't get political. I'm like, politics is in everything. It's literally in everything. I can sit here and make a race issue out of anything. My teacher once told me, like, I have never experienced a student that was able to write their paper and include racism in every paper. And I was like, I was able to do that. It's everywhere. So keep calling it out. Keep speaking truth to power. People of color need to get political. Like, what did Maxine Waters say? Congresswoman Maxine Waters say, black people have to start being controversial. We have to stop being afraid to have these conversations. We have to stop being afraid. We've been told so long that these spaces aren't for us. These places, these positions aren't for us. But they are, and they need us, and they need our voices. The more we're at the table, look at the Roseanne situation. A black woman did that. Had that not been a black woman, her show would have still been on. It was the highest rating. It got the highest ratings in how long on an ABC show? The fact that they canceled that's what happens when you have people of color in position of powers. That black woman said, I'm not having this, not doing it. But on the other side of that, can we please stop waiting for black women to save the world?
But do you give credit though? Do you give credit to ABC because this was their number one show, and they now have to pay everybody else other than her their full salary for next year, and they lose their number one show. Do we give them credit?
I don't give credit to ABC because Roseanne's been racist. She shouldn't even have got her show rebooted. Everybody knew this about her. So, you know, yes, I'm proud that a black woman stood up and did what she did, but she shouldn't even have got her show back. Everybody knows this about Roseanne. I haven't liked her for a long time. She's been racist. She's been going off on Twitter rants and with her conspiracy theories and her crazy ideas that are just lies. I mean, you know, fake news. So the fact that she even was able to get her show back was ridiculous.
Okay, so tell us about Moshe. What it's a word in Swahili for unity. I, by the way, this next question is reflective of the fact that I don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, we talk about, you know, racism in terms of how are we going to get, you know, the white people to understand. Is there sort of a mirror part of that, too? You know, how do you get black people to find a way to accept and hopefully turn white people around? Is there so much anger and distrust that we have a problem on both sides?
Well, one, I don't think we should be looking for black people to do that. They've been through so much trauma. Once again, going to use Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I reclaim my time all the time, reclaiming my time. It's not people of color's job to educate white people. If they choose to and they would like to, like the career path I've chosen is doing that. I don't mind it, but there's a lot of people of color that don't mind it. That do mind it. I mean, it triggers you. It brings up traumatic experiences. You get a lot of the, I'm sorry you're experiencing this and thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, but there is like so many examples when there's a meeting of when people see each other. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, what was that show? Sarah Silverman did a 10-episode show on Netflix this year, and what she did at the end of each show, they went to a different red state, and she's a Jewish lefty. And the first episode, she went to a family of really right-wing Texans, and they had dinner together. And they disagreed on everything. And when they left, they were hugging and kissing. So in a way, if you really want to have change, yes, it's for the perpetrator to mm-hmm. bend the most. But, you know,
but they need to come in our communities and experience our life. We my career is spent going into their spaces. When do they ever come into our spaces mm-hmm. and experience it? I mean, Kimberly Papillon did a presentation at SBCC which spoke to that about the only way to let down your biases is by experiencing mm-hmm. something. And a lot of white people don't like to lean into their comfortability.
But we're seeing it. But discomfort. You know what? The things that are, whether the police are being prosecuted or not, you know, from a white person's standpoint, I begin to, maybe I can't totally, but I begin to understand much more about what it's like on the street when I see these videos. I just didn't get it. And when I see...
But do you feel it in a way of, wow, that hurts, or wow, that could be me? Because it needs to go past a... Like, I don't want to feel anymore like, wow...
No, but
I'm sorry for that. I want to feel like that's me. That could be me.
But I can never do that. I can't feel because it's not going to be me. But what I can feel that it's disgusting. And as a human being, I want to live in a society where it doesn't exist. It's very difficult to be somebody else. And, you know, look, I'm Jewish and mm-hmm. I've had my own issues with people who are, you know, just don't like me because I'm Jewish. And and there's anti-Semitism is growing, particularly in Europe. Mm-hmm. So I understand, but they'll never get it, what it's like to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. And they'll never get over the stereotypes. But what you can do is have a view, I think, as a person to want to live in a society where everyone is equal and everyone can get along. And yeah. And that's something that's universal. Yeah. So, yes, I will never get it. I will never.
But equality is not the thing anymore. It's about equity. Like, if you have more resources and you are better off than me and you're doing well, then we don't need equality. I need equity. I need people to focus more on me and not on you because we're already not equals. So I don't know. People continuing to use equality is kind of like a smack in the face because we're not all equal. We're not always going to be equal.
It's true, but we can't forget and this is a tribute to the black population. In the last 40 years, there's been a huge increase in the middle class of blacks. The black people have had probably one of the fastest growth rates in entering the middle class in professional jobs. And, you know, yes, there's still inequality and much more difficulty, but they've been able to succeed. It's you know,
there's still a way larger population that's not, and we're still not. But you of don't the think wealthiest, and we're still at higher incarceration rates
that's
than
okay
any other race. So it's like we can't like to focus on the little economic mobility we are getting. To me, that's not enough. Like, thank you for the 20%. Thank you for the 40%. That's not enough for me.
Well, okay,
and what? And then what are those black people doing to help other black people? A lot of them aren't, because it's like that whole I survived. Hey, figure it out yourself. Figure it out.
Well, look at the two black people in the administration. I mean, they're more rabid than a lot of white people from the South.
Alvin,
I mean, I don't get that at all. You know, so yes.
The Coons.
You're on this happy note. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christy Farmer.
It's Crystal.
Crystal
mm-hmm.
Farmer.
Sometimes that L looks like an I.
Well, it's my eyesight. It's there, but it's kind of very cloudy. Crystal Farmer, student trustee for the SBC of the SBC Board of Trustees, the Moja student coordinator, Moja meaning unity in Swahili, and a grassroots activist. So we talk about things that are wrong with society. What about the idea of guns don't kill people, people do? And the idea of maybe we could solve this by having all our teachers have guns in the classroom.
Give a black teacher a gun and watch the police come in there and just shoot them. It's a great idea. Mm-mm.
So is this part of the problem, the whole gun issue in America, where there's 350 million guns in this country? How does this affect this whole issue?
The problem with gun violence is white male toxic masculinity. That's straight what it's rooted in. It's rooted in white supremacy. It is disrespectful for society to even blame it on mental health issues, because there's a bunch of people dealing with mental health issues that aren't going around doing mass shootings and murdering people. The problem is rooted in white toxic male masculinity. We need to get in these elementary schools why these young men are young and teach them to not be violent. We spend too many times teaching women how to deal with violent men, and we don't teach men how to not be violent and not harm people. And that's what's the problem. That's why I always advocate, like, we need to be speaking to the youth. We need to be doing it. Everybody wants to start in college implementing these programs and these support services. But what about at these elementary schools? What support services? What counseling are we offering? I mean, I'm going to have to put my daughter has been acting out lately because of the single parent home and making comments about missing her dad. And I'm going to have to look for therapy for her. But I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could send her to school and they had support services to help her through what she's dealing with, because she's been acting out at school, not at home. But they don't have a lot of those resources, and they're not paying attention to kids in school and not caring and loving and supporting them. I mean, there's this great show on Netflix, 13 Reasons Why, that highlights a lot of that within the high school, of just the neglect of the school to the youth and all the stuff that's going on.
It's too scary to watch, but sure.
And you know what? It's terrifying. There's a lot of scenes. There's a lot of things I don't even understand, because I'm like, oh my God, my high school wasn't like that. But then it was funny, because I was actually talking to someone that went to another high school out here, and he was like, oh yeah, that was happening. And it's like, if you're not in that bubble, you don't hear about that stuff. And it's like, so many schools are just missing it when these things are happening.
So when you talk about, you know, the white male aggressiveness and guns, I could see that related to mass shootings. But if you look at gang violence, you look at Chicago, that seems to be mostly black-on-black shootings. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, when you rip people of all their resources, deny them economic mobility, put them in urban communities with low-income schools with little funding, you're going to get a lot of angry people. You're going to get a lot of angry people that are looking to survive the best way they know how. So I blame also white supremacy for black-on-black crime. I blame white people for black-on-black crime. They started that, you know, infiltrating our communities with drugs, taking all our black men and throwing them into jail, leaving single-parent homes where mothers have to work and they can't really attend to their children because they're working 2-3 jobs. What do you think these kids are going to do? They're going to go out on the streets and learn how to get it how they can.
But if you talk to a white family in red states that are not doing very well, other than the racism part, they tell you the same story about how they don't have opportunity, how their kids are going hungry, and how they lost their job because they'll say their anger is to, you know, the Chinese or mm-hmm. the Canadians or the Mexicans. But this is why, when I was talking about before about kind of meeting of the minds, there's a lot of similarities between the two extremes because they're going through the same thing. Now, it may not be the same thing in terms of, you know, where they came from. I agree with you. And we can, as a white person,
they're not going through the same things, because no matter how poor you are as a white person, no matter what you're going through, you can walk into a building and you're white. Nobody, if you look the part, if you clean up, you take a shower, you walk into a building. I mean, even I've seen literally in Santa Barbara a homeless man doing drugs on State Street, and a police escorted him to another place. Mm-hmm. If that would have been a black man, he would have been shot. So at the end of the day, yes, we could be on the same level economically, going through the same similar struggles. But when you walk out to American society, you're in a white body, and I am not. I'm automatically hated, automatically discriminated against, automatically prone to police brutality, and you're not. You go into a job and you apply, you're a white face, I'm a black face, and I could easily, I know for a fact I haven't gotten several jobs because of the fact that I've been a black woman. You send your resume through email and you show up, you automatically see their facial expression like, wow, I didn't know she was black. And the whole mood changes. And you feel this. And black people know this. And this is where white people will never be able to connect. We know this because we've experienced it since we've been born into this world. We know that look of discomfort. We know that look when we walk into somewhere and they're like, wow, she's black. Because my name is Crystal Farmer. People would think that was a white woman. And then you walk in and they see that it's not. You see that disbelief and that instant like, whoa.
Even in Santa Barbara.
Even it's happened to me. countless times I've worked at places and I have gotten managers are extra rude to me because, and I'm a hardworking, amazing employee that loves to be as helpful to a business as I can. That's how I was born. I've always been taught that way. That's how I was raised. And I've been discriminated against at plenty of jobs I've had and outcasted as the angry black woman when I'm only trying to help the business. And I've seen other employees show up late, just do amounts of things that I would never do. And still somehow I was blamed or I was given a talking to where I've had to leave jobs because I felt like, wow, you don't appreciate me. Thank God now I work for a black man and it's the best experience I've ever had in being employed. I work for Dr. Chris Johnson, who's amazing. He's the associate dean at SBCC. And it's the best experience I've had being an employee because I work for a black person.
So just can I understand, because I don't understand. You're a very beautiful young woman. You're saying that if you were to go into a store in Santa Barbara, just mm-hmm. like you are now, it's possible that you could get from the proprietor a different kind of experience than I would?
Oh, definitely. It doesn't matter how attractive I am, how well-dressed. I've seen people, you know, people don't – I have a critical lens now because of the work I do. So a lot of times my sisters don't notice, but we'll be out and I can tell people looking at us while we're walking in the store. And you know, we're a group of young girls dressed well, just shopping. This happens all the time. And once you've had an experience, you notice it. So I've had an experience and I know experience. I'm educated on the experiences. So I have a critical lens wherever I go. And I notice when it's happening. I notice when we're being treated unfairly. A lot of times my sister's like, oh my God, don't get Angela Davis on us. Not here, you know? And I'm like, no, like this is unacceptable. And a lot of black people, they try to just stay under the radar. They don't want to make too much noise. And I'm like, that's unacceptable. Like, we're humans just like them. We should be treated with respect. And so, you know, I have that lens, and a lot of people don't. So once you have that lens, you can't get rid of it.
You're listening to AHAR Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final episode.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Crystal Farmer, the student trustee for the SBCC Board of Directors, the MOJA student coordinator, and a grassroots activist. So you are the trustee for the SBC Board of Trustees, so you should get an award because, A, I've been to some of those meetings, and what you need to do is bring something soft so that you can put on the desk in front of you so you don't hit your head when you fall asleep. But also, you know,
they'll be entertaining now.
Yeah, well, but, you know, it's interesting because we were talking about the struggles in a community even like Santa Barbara when you're black, but now you're going to be the one student trustee on the board. So what is...
The first black woman. That's a single mother.
Do you have an agenda?
I think my agenda, first and foremost, is always the betterment of my people, because black people are the most marginalized. That's always my top priority. I tell people that in all spaces I occupy, because people get offended. Why do you always just focus on black people? We focus, and I'm like, once we're cared about, then I can focus on you. So that's first and foremost my agenda. I really want to focus on the achievement gap and why they're not caring that black students are not performing well. That does not sit well with me. So that's going to be my first order of business. Right now we're trying to develop emoji practices and extra support in some of the programs we're doing now in ESP. My boss and I are, along with the ESP staff, just got a emoji course to be involved in their English program. So they're literally holding spots just for black students for this class. So now it's our job to fill it up, which is also difficult because it's hard to find black students to motivate them to, hey, let's go. You need to, because you have this IGETSE and these 60 units that you need to transfer on, and you need to complete your English, you need to complete your sciences and your math. And a lot of black students come there and, you know, they fiddle in these art classes and, you know, and the next thing you know, they have 60 units, but they're not transferable. So our goal is to get these kids in the classes that they need to be taking so that they can go and transfer on. So we're starting with English, and then our next step is hopefully math. Math, and then just keep going on and on to these other departments.
Yeah, that's great, because one of the things that I think City College, when I was involved, realizes that if you have peer help where the person looks like you, you know, they had the prisoner,
exactly.
The prisoner thing where they were able to help prisoners because they had other prisoners helping, where you, in the Hispanics, certainly with women, anyone mm-hmm. that, you know, can share their own experience and the people can identify with, really give people motivation. Mm-hmm. So,
That's another order of business on my list. You know, we found out that, you know, they had 60 black applicants and none of them made it until final interview at SBCC. And that's a struggle right now, is that there isn't a lot of black professors, staff, admin. You know, the only one we have is my boss, who's Dr. Chris Johnson. And even he's tried to apply for higher positions and didn't even make it to a final interview, which is unacceptable because he works at the school. He knows it. He knows what he's doing. You know, he's not as fired up about it as I am, but I'm like, oh, no.
So we're just about out of time, but the final question is, between when you graduate and you become governor, what do you intend to do?
You know, I plan on not sure. I'm kind of bouncing between which schools I want to go to. The Bay has a lot of support and a lot of people of color in positions of power, especially politically. So a lot of people that I've seen and been mentoring me at conferences have really been pushing me to go there. So I think I'm going to do UCD and get into the student government, because they deal directly with the state politics in Sacramento, and then go from there. And I'm pursuing a law degree, so
I'm sure whatever you do, you'll do wonderful. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Welcome.
You have to come back and tell us about your journey when you get more involved with the trustees. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.